Good evening. I'm Drake Anubis. There was an essay on Slashdot a while ago, I want to say about 3 to 4 months, maybe, and it described a cheat attack where you could more or less monopolize any percentage of the CPU that you wanted to without administrative privileges. The title of the paper, I believe, was Secretly Monopolizing the CPU Without Superuser Privileges, hence the title. But if you don't want to read the 25-page article, I'll just go ahead and rehash that for you. Basically, they described a cheat attack where you could use, well, you could make any process run with any percentage of the CPU cycles that you want to consume without administrative privileges. In some of the operating systems, actually, in all of the operating systems that they found to be affected by this, listing the processes would show that the cheating process was not using any CPU resources, or that it was just chronically sleeping. And the missing cycles would be attributed to some other process, or they would just be completely unreported. Most of the general purpose operating systems are vulnerable to this cheat attack because of the way they account for CPU usage and how they use that information to prioritize the competing processes that want to use the CPU. Any cheating process, and we're going to say cheating process now, if that's the cheating process is the one that is trying to monopolize the CPU. So any cheating process can be run at any percent, with regardless of the system's fairness policy. And tools such as, you know, let's see, I forgot what XView I want to say, there's TOP, there's PS, and all of those, they do not report the CPU usage correctly. And operating systems such as Linux, Solaris, HPUX, IAX, the Windows and BSD families, a couple others, they all use clock interrupts to maintain accounting and scheduling. And I'll just step back and explain that for a second. You see, at boot time, the kernel sets a hardware clock to generate these periodic, interrupts, I suppose. And it will be every few milliseconds, depending on the operating system. I think 1 to 15. It varies, though. I think Windows is 7, I want to say. That's probably wrong, though. Anyway, each one of these time instances is called a tick. And with the time that is elapsed between the two ticks is a tick duration, okay? So we got that terminology down? So what happens is when there's an interrupt, it invokes the tick handler, which handles some things such as timing services and alarm interrupts. It also takes care of the accounting usage for the CPU, and it weaves the processes around so it looks like it gives the illusion that they're operating concurrently, when really the CPU is just quickly switching between processes, allowing them each to have a couple of milliseconds to do their thing. And the problem is that CPU billing on these ticking kernel operating systems is based on sampling. So whatever process consumed the CPU during that tick duration is billed for the entire CPU consumption, because it's assumed that only one process is going to be functioning during a tick duration, which is normally true. So if you had a process that could somehow arrange that it always started just after a clock tick and then always went to sleep right before the next clock tick, that process would never actually be billed, because it only, whatever process happens to be running when the clock ticks is the process that gets billed, and this, the cheating one would stop right before that. Now, it's technically impossible to do this, because there's no way that you can tell the process to stop before the next tick, because it doesn't know that when the tick is going to be, it uses the tick as timing. You see what I'm saying? And, let's see, I believe if you actually have a privileged application, you can get the OS to deliver alarm signals in between ticks. I'm pretty sure about that. Anyway, it's supposed to be technically impossible. If you actually did this, it would lead to misaccounting, and another process would be billed for the CPU usage time. But whichever process runs while the tick takes place is billed for the entire duration of the tick, even if it only consumed a small fraction. So generally, the more CPU cycles that are used by a process, the lower its priority becomes. It's like a negative feedback loop, so it makes sure that all the processes get a equal share of the CPU, or not equal, a fair share of the CPU. And the processes that do not use a lot of CPU, such as like a word processor, they get to they have high priority for those little bursts that they want. Normally like I/O bound devices or word processors. Like if you've ever had and I think this is the example they use in the essay too, is if you ever have like a overloaded system, the word processor always responds because it's normally not that intensive, so it gets a high priority for the little burst that it has. Anyway, so if you had a cheating application, like I should say cheating process, if you had a cheating process like this one, which is constantly appearing to consume 0% of the CPU, it's going to be given a very high priority just by the fairness system that's built into the operating system. Interestingly enough, Mac OS is not affected by this for a variety of reasons, which we'll get to in a second. But Solaris, which maintains perfectly accurate CPU accounting, which is not based on sampling, would not be affected of this if it actually used that data for something. But unfortunately, the scheduling subsystem does not make use of the perfectly accurate data. It has to use its own inaccurate data. Windows XP also maintains fantastically accurate accounting that is unused by its scheduler, but which doesn't really matter because it has the same problem that the Linux kernel has, both 2 and... I think it's just 2.6 that has the interactive... Okay, hold on. The Linux kernel has a problem with interactive processes, but I think interactive processes are only in 2.6. But anyway, Windows XP has interactive processes as well, and I'll explain what that is in a second. Mac OS X is immune to this because Mac OS X uses a completely different timing mechanism. It doesn't go off the kernel ticks. It instead uses these little one-shot timers, which will drive its timing and alarm events. And these are actually hardware interrupts that are set to go off for specific needs rather than at periodic intervals, sort of like the dynamic ticking kernel, which is going to be in Fedora, or is in Fedora, one of the two. At any rate, it's not because of any security reasons. This dynamically ticking kernel, these one-shot timing, however you want to say it, is motivated by various benefits. It consumes less power because the system can sleep slightly longer. And so it's good for mobile devices. I know Fedora is pushing it in laptops now. It has a better alarm resolution, and it supposedly reduces the kind of OS noise, I guess. But I don't know about that. However, the reason this doesn't work is because the time period for the timer events is a variable. And the CPU accounting based on sampling can't be done with a variable because there's no tick duration to sample. Now, this is a problem, not just because you can compromise any amount of the CPU that you want, but you could also use it to launch just denial of service attacks, or probably reduction of quality attacks, I suppose. Because you could say, you know, have this process consume 90% of this web server's CPU and just bring the thing to a crawl. Now what happens is, I'll explain how this works now, I suppose. When a tick occurs, the entire interval since the previous tick is billed to the application that ran just before that tick occurred. So what you need to do is you need to develop a process which is capable of starting to run right after another application is billed, and then will stop right before the next. So you effectively want to kind of sneak into that tick duration. And setting the, I guess it's the sleep timer, I want to say, to an interval of like 0 nanoseconds will make it wake up right after the next tick. So you solved that problem. The hard part is to stop it running before the next tick, which is very hard to do because, like I said before, you can't tell the process to stop before something happens when it uses that happening as the timing mechanism. And the OS does not, well, technically does not provide intra-tick timing services, so it's not as granular as it needs to be. You can get around this, though, if you had a process that was respecting a cycle counter. So what you want to do with a cycle counter is you want to create a whole bunch of cycles, like let's say 1,000. And you want to look at, you want to try and calculate the interval between two consecutive ticks in cycles. So you go ahead and create a routine that makes, 1,000 cycles and then averages the duration of those. Additionally, this data can be deduced from other various OS kind of things. Like in Linux, I believe there's the CPU frequency, under proc CPU info. In fact, I think it has the CPU interrupts under proc interrupts. Huh. Anyway, once you figure out how many cycles are within the tick, you can go ahead and write an application that will make sure that it only runs during a fraction of those. And then when that limit is reached, of course, it goes to sleep. So let's say, no, this is completely wrong, but let's say there are 10 cycles in a tick. Well, you make an application that counts the cycles and then stops at the ninth one, or however you want to do that. So this solves the problem of knowing when to stop to avoid being billed. As a result, this non-privileged application, which is running, you know, under the user, not under root, can commandeer any desired percentage of the CPU resources. And it looks as though it's taking up none because it's not being billed. And because of interactive processes, now interactive processes are things such as movie players or games or other things which would have had a low priority because they're consuming a lot of CPU. However, they need to have a high priority, otherwise you notice the movie or the game is not playing correctly. Linux 2.6, I want to think. I'm pretty sure 2.4 does not have interactive processes. But 2.6, I know that 2.6 does provide special treatment for this. It can identify processes and then identify them as interactive. Windows does the same thing, which is why it's also vulnerable despite its perfect accounting. The cycles used by the cheating program are attributed to some other innocent application, or they are simply just completely unaccounted for, which makes it very hard to detect. Unless you name it like they did in the example in the essay, I believe they called it like cheater.ps or something. So that makes it kind of obvious, but if you can hide it correctly. I know on my Windows machine sitting next to me over there, it has like, what, 80 processes when it's idling? I don't think I'd notice. Okay. Anyway, I'll have a link to the actual essay if you want to go ahead and read that. I recommend you do. You can actually get a lot of information, even if you want to stop before the technical parts, where they explain how you can prevent this and all kinds of really complicated math that gets in there. If you just want to skip over that, you can pretty much get a good understanding, probably better than you did from me, because I don't explain things very well. If you have any questions or comments because of that, you can reach me at drakeanubis@gmail.com. And, yeah.
Where'd you learn to tango?
With the French ambassador's daughter in her dorm room at Miss Porter's. And you?
With Nanette Himmelfarb, the rabbi's daughter at the Scarsdale Jewish Community Center.
Tango!